Welcome to Raw, the S4 Labour podcast dedicated to helping hospitality businesses thrive. With your hosts, Alistair Scott and myself, Richard Hartley. Each episode, we'll dive into how operators can stay competitive through smarter operations, bringing you insights, some stories, and some expert guests. Whether you're managing a small restaurant or a nationwide operation, Raw is your go-to source for success. So without further ado, let's get on with the episode.
This episode was recorded during a live session. Any offers mentioned were exclusive to live attendees. However, if you have questions, feel free to get in touch.
Right. Good afternoon. I think we are. We've been given green lights, thumbs up, and the director's clapperboard has come down shouting action. So we are now officially live with myself, Gareth, and my colleague, Tom. Welcome, everybody. It's great to have so many people join us this afternoon. We know your time is precious. So Tom and I don't think we haven't really done a webinar before together, and we certainly haven't done one live. So rehearsals, practice. Yeah, well, this is, yes, adrenaline is pumping. So, right, like I said, it's great to see everyone who can join us this afternoon. We are genuinely excited about what we've got in store. So I was thinking about this, though, Tom, you and I meeting in a pub, and we don't have a pint in front of us. And does that feel strange to you, like it does me? Yeah, it's not. And the one thing we were talking about in terms of our hospitality experience, what was the number we got to in terms of experience, joint experience? It's a bit disappointing. 40-ish years. So, yeah, we've done a lot. We've seen a lot. And hopefully we can impart some wisdom and some experience in this afternoon session. But where are we today, Tom? Because, I mean, this is a stunning place.
So we are at the Matthew and Arms. It's a Buckton Boutique Inn, one of our customers, S4. We've just done a pretty chunky ops excellence project with these guys, and they were kind enough to let us come and use the room. So we've had some lunch, and we are.
It's a genuinely beautiful place. So, yeah, very kind of them to let us use their room this afternoon. So let's set out the goal for today's session. There's a couple of main sort of goals we want to share, and that's exploring where we see the hidden labor cost savings when it comes to rotor writing, and secondly, really sort of play on what you and your team do in terms of the S4 Operational Excellence Program and how it's been helping our customers. You know, we use the phrase turbocharge their managers into top performers, right? So those are the two primary goals. We've got lots of topics that we'll talk through. And for those who stay with us until the end, we've got some nuggets of S4 wisdom that we can share with you, a little bit of incentive for you, but nuggets of wisdom that we generally think you can implement in your businesses tomorrow, next week, straight away, and really see some meaningful impact. So there's something for you at the end. This is a questions and answer session. So encouragement, there's a question and answer Q&A chat bot. So please fire your questions in there. And at the end of the session, we'll get to as many as we possibly can. And I think, Tom, then you actually have something even more to...
Bit of a freebie.
Bit of an incentive, yeah. And we'll explain all later. Brilliant. Right. Let us get cracking. Right. So first topic, today's labor landscape. We were going to set the scene, even though we all know what happened in April. We're not strangers to that. National living wage increase, that's expected. But the other consequences of the labor budget in terms of the national insurance contributions, not just going up, but reducing the threshold of when that was applied. What have you been seeing and hearing when you are out and about talking to people, our customers? So
I think it obviously hit people harder than they probably budgeted for beforehand. So we've seen past couple of years uplift 6.5% across most of our customers, and this year it was more like 9 to 10% uplift in April. So really hit everybody hard.
Yeah.
Labour's been everyone's biggest controllable cost for a while now. I mean, back when we were running clubs, it was your beer. But ultimately, it's costing people a lot more money. Labour's not £4 an hour anymore. You know, you're looking at with National Insurance, with your holiday contributions, pension costs, and everything, you're looking kind of £15, £16 an hour straight at the bat.
£60 10. Yeah.
So that's tough. Not just the labour landscape, I think hospitality in general, everything's slightly more unpredictable than it had been.
Yeah.
We're seeing quite high turnover. Labour's obviously expensive, we've said that already. But I guess habits and behaviours that have maybe existed in the industry for quite a long time need to change. Probably what we experience the most when we're out and about. It's not all doom and gloom, don't get me wrong. I think there was a bit of, and I hate using the C word, the post-COVID mentality, or the post-COVID landscape, where the ball was very much in the team's court. To put it bluntly, you know, we were be out to help out. Everyone went out and just needed team. We needed staff. A lot of the people that had worked in the industry pre-COVID had gone out, and I know the majority of my chefs at the time had gone out and become sparkies and plumbers and,
Delivery drivers.
delivery
Yeah.
drivers. But what we started to see is that started to change. So there's a lot more people coming back to hospitality, but also the opportunity for businesses to start to get a bit more control back of when they need people. You know, the team aren't necessarily dictating when they're going to work anymore. You can really start to work to the needs of the business. So that's really good. And then the other thing that I like, and I always liked when I have pubs, we're seeing a bit less of the cut, cut, cut mentality when it comes to labour. Because the hype was so much this year, I think loads of our customers have started to have a real focus on sales driving,
Yeah.
which is great. I always love that anyway. I'd much rather smash the top line so it ends up helping grow the bottom line.
It was always the best way of attacking that labor line, wasn't it? And I generally think that people, there's not much to cut at the moment without really jeopardizing that guest experience, which is obviously at the top end of the priority list.
Exactly. So that is good. That's the good side of it, but I think there's still obviously an awful lot of opportunity.
Yep.
So yeah, that's pretty much where everyone's sitting at the moment, I think. But April was obviously a massive hit. So that's everyone's driver behind at the moment.
Excellent. What do you, we're talking about forecasting. I was just, are you generally getting a sense that people are they finding that difficult, like volatile in the sense that it is becoming harder? We were talking about shifts in sort of habits, consumer habits.
I think having to think about it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, forecasting has always been massively important, and we'll go into it in a bit more detail in a bit. But I think forecasting's always been important. It's difficult if you haven't got the information to tell you how the trends are changing. So people are definitely having to think about how much they're forecasting and what their labour spend is going to be a lot more than maybe were before.
Yeah.
So,
So in terms of the Ops Excellence program, it's been going for what, 2 years now? 3 years? And you've done some really incredible projects, and there's so much to sort of talk about in terms of winning stories. What about when it comes to the results, what's working and what's really sort of cemented the principle behind it?
There's a few things. So I'm trying to work in threes. I've got my little notes in front of me. Data-led decisions. So I think, like I said, people are having to think about forecasting a lot more. They're having to think about deployment a lot more, which has always been a USP of S4, with the way our deployment tools work. But using data to make decisions rather than just doing the way it's always been done is working. So actually getting into the detail of how many people they need, when they need them, what the training patterns are, et cetera, et cetera. But actually getting hold of the data is the biggest thing that helps. You know, not the last project we did, but the one before, just looking at their slack and stress times, as we call it in S4, so the time when they maybe had slightly more team than the demand, or the time when they had slightly less team, they've had a 2% margin improvement just by going in and redeploying the teams. So, but it's all driven by data. They need all that data in the first place. Second piece I would say is having a bit more of a focus on planning. Everyone likes to think that we all work a couple of weeks ahead. I think I said to you earlier when we were having a chat, I wasn't necessarily the best with my rotors when I was a GM. You know, the teams all lived in. They were all pretty flexible. I therefore thought, you know, they don't have a life outside of work because they all work with all of their friends and it's fine. So, you know, we'd be posting our rota 4 days before the week started. But actually, it doesn't give you the opportunity to properly reduce the risk in terms of how much you're going to spend if you're not further out with your planning. Get it, weather can change, loads of pubs and restaurants are seasonal, so weather can change. But if you haven't got a solid, rigid plan in the first place and you're not far enough out with it, you get reactive. You get to the point of going into a week where you might have a team that can't work, or you might have more team than you need because all of a sudden, you know, something's happened. So getting 2 weeks out, I would say, is always really, really good practice. So one of the things we always implement as part of an ops excellence program is that best practice, how to get 2 weeks ahead, how to forecast properly. But focusing on planning is really, really important.
Do you still see those what we used to call like these sunny standby shifts and whatever the equivalent is? Do you still see that as a habit?
It's difficult with legality and HR, and you know, if you've got somebody on the rota, technically they're on the rota, so it's a difficult one. I think the managers know their teams, and the final point I was going to make actually with that manager empowerment piece, where managers and GMs you hope would know their teams well enough to be able to go, I've got these people that I know I can call on. So there are those people you can pick the phone up to and go, oh, can you give us a hand tonight? Could do with an extra. Or you've got the other end of the scale where you know if you've got team on shift, you know those people that are going to go, yeah, I'm going to go home at 8 o'clock because it's dead. You ask the team at 10 on a Saturday night if someone wants to go home, someone will want to go home.
I think that's an interesting point, isn't it? Because sometimes I don't think the question's asked necessarily, and there's a bit of a default. No one will want to do that. But actually, if you ask the question, there's that input and flexibility. It's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, there's always someone that will go home, and there's always that team member that actually wants a bit of cash. You know, within S4, when going out and coaching rotas, you can post vacant shifts out to people. So you've written the rota, you think you've got as many people on as you can possibly get. You can post those shifts out, and there's always that one person that will pick up an extra where they want it. So
On the other side of that coin as well, we were talking about the power of one shifters, weren't we, in terms of, you know, this threshold where it used to be 16 hours per week and I kicked in. Now the reality is it's 8 hours. And actually, in our teams, who amongst them would like to just do that Sunday shift or that Saturday shift and you know, reap the rewards in terms of tips? But just, you know, that fits into their life really well, doesn't it?
yeah, and I think that's a big mentality shift. It's a big mentality change. You know, I was always adamant that full-timers were key because they were invested in the business, and you know, they are fully trained, properly trained, cross-trained. They can do everything you want them to do. So the key now is making sure that your top-ups, so your team that are coming in to be that extra support, if they are under 8 hours, it's going to cost you less money. Full stop. So getting those guys in and making sure they still understand the job role, putting them in the right place, making sure they're doing the right job when they're coming in, is key, really, and it does help saves a little bit of cash here and there. That way you can do it.
I think the manager empowerment piece is hugely important, isn't it? Because we all know that managers get frustrated if they're getting distracted from what they really want to do, and that could be a simple thing, not having the right tools, then it just has that sort of negative ripple effect, doesn't it? And then time gets crept in, wasted, and then they're off the floor, not training the teams. That sort of inadvertently leads us quite nicely into the next section in terms of, you know, you've made it clear that, you know, the nurturing, focusing on the habits and the behaviors, right? It's not just about implementing a solution, and then sort of, giving the keys and then driving
Amazing.
off. This is about how you empower your teams, how you trust your teams to do the good job. But yeah, it's all about the sort of this is where unlocking the hidden savings come into play very neatly. So the whole operational excellence approach, when you started it, you were presented with some common pitfalls, right? Is that fair to say? Sort of commonality amongst the questions and the queries. What were those sort of
So,
common
my
pitfalls?
standard rule of three. So, biggest things that we saw, habits and behaviors, you've just said, but trying to coach out old habits or habits living within a business was one of the pitfalls.
Right.
That old, we've always run with three people on a Monday, therefore we're always going to run with three.
Yep.
That's what they've always done. Normally, you'll find that obviously training gets passed down manager to manager. If previous managers have had habits where they've gone, this is how we've always done it, trying to coach that out and trying to get it moved or get it shifted is always really, really difficult. But I see it across the board. We'll go in and have a conversation with managers, ops managers, and they'll go, we think these things live within our businesses. They've always worked with a 12 o'clock start. Everybody comes in at 12. That's how they've always done it. That's how they're going to do it.
Yep.
Everybody finishes at 7 o'clock on a Sunday. They've always done it that way. That's how they're always going to do it. And they're not necessarily adapting or haven't had the ability to look at the real detail of the business to adapt to a changing environment. And hospitality is always changing. So that's the first bit. Habits and behaviors mindset is huge. Second thing we always see is Alistair, our owner's favorite thing to talk about, is what we call plus one management.
Yeah.
What do I mean by that? Managers putting themselves on as an extra.
Right.
So I'm going to be there. I'm doing an in shift. You see in shifts on rotors all the time. I see it
And
in Excel.
you're not talking about a float
No,
role.
no, no. Floating roles are massively important, I
Right.
think. And the floating role for me on a peak shift should always be the GM or the most senior person that's there so they can actually get around the business. It's another conversation we have with people when we go out, should the GM be doing the door on a Saturday night?
It's a tough one, isn't it? You get locked in there. It's a very important job, don't get me wrong, but it.
And they think, a lot of people think, oh, well, it means I'm touching every table. Well, you are, and you're touching that table once when you sit them down.
Sitting
You then
down.
don't know what's going on in
Yep.
the rest of the business for the rest of the shift. So no, not a floating role. This is managers purely being there just in case. It's that just in case mentality as well. So we do see it with teams sometimes. I'm going to put an extra one on just in case a coach load turns up, or what if the coach load doesn't turn up and you're then spending £15 an hour, £16 an hour on that person to stand around when it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So that plus one management piece is huge. Manager admin days are, we'll talk about this again in a second, but manager, GM there 9 till 6 on a Monday. They're an extra. They're over and above what you need to be able to look after the guests that are coming in the door.
Yeah.
But they're on the road, so they're costing money. Sometimes they don't see it as costing money if they're on a salary. That's a really interesting conversation we have with people all the time. They go, well, I'm on a salary, so I'm just making a
It doesn't
payout.
matter. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Be there when you need to be there, and you'll save money on hourly team. So, yeah.
And dare I ask, is there a flip between your sort of front of house mentality and your back of house mentality? Do you is that I know that's very risky, isn't it? I hope there's no chefs in the room, but
Honestly, we see far more manager, extra manager, admin time front of
yeah.
house than we do back of house.
Yeah.
Prep and task management are always a contentious subject in the kitchen. And we'll kind of go through that in a tick when we talk about task management and admin management. But I think generally it is the GM or it's the that deputy manager that's there when the GMs aren't there, and they're doing admin. They're there as an extra,
Yeah.
that just in case. And then the final one, and it's my biggest one, and this is a contentious thing as well. We see an awful lot of one size fits all, particularly when you get into branded environment. We worked in not necessarily branded pubs, but we worked in a big pub group for a long time together years ago. And it doesn't matter if you have got, I understand why it happens. You've got the same menu, you've got the same service cycle, you've got the same prep levels required in the kitchen. Therefore, the expectation on everybody is the same. And it's really easy to paint everyone with one brush. It's really difficult when you get to a bigger group as well. If you've got an ops manager, you cannot be in the pubs all the time. Therefore, it's easy to apply the same logic to everybody. But every single site, restaurant, hotel, pub has its nuances, has its differences. So be it section sizes, be it late, we're here today and they've got five separate little rooms. There's a big restaurant, there's a private dining room, and there's two floors, and there's cottages out the back with rooms in. Every single site is different. So trying to take that into account, even if you are a bigger group, is hugely important. It would be it, targeting, be it budgeting. Budgeting's massively different from one site to another, or should be different from one site to another, all dependent on all of those little niche things that could affect it.
Well, I think it's really important. There was that really good example from one of your team, Dale, in terms of the empowerment of a head chef and understanding his specific challenges in the site, in terms of he had a container or a sort of outhouse prep kitchen, which required considerable amounts of steps to and from. And actually, as soon as you start considering that, your mentality changes in terms of the pressures that they have, the practicalities, and how you get their buy-in as well, in terms of the trust, isn't it? Because otherwise, your empowerment's not going to mean anything if they don't trust
No, exactly.
what
We
you're talking about.
what's that other example I used earlier? We visited a St. Austell brewery site when we did a project with them last year. And the vineyard was, because it's on the quay, right on the seafront, right on the quay, sorry, in the harbour. The vineyard was 200 yards down the road in a garage. So when they're trekking things back and forth all the time, if you don't take that into account, or if the managers don't feel like they've got the ability to express things like that, that's where it starts to get challenging, I suppose.
And that's where I suppose the whole Goldilocks, as you call it, which is a very unique name, but it's a really, really good description of the program that you do. It sort of removes that one size fits all mentality, right?
So Goldilocks is it's kind of we do projects, we do these ops excellence projects with people, with businesses, and the Goldilocks is kind of the final end point of the project. So after we've done training and task management and habits and stuff, we'll go out and we visit every single pub within a business if they want us to. So Buckham, we've just finished the project with these guys. We visited all 71 Buckham sites.
So I hadn't seen you for a few weeks.
Months.
Yeah, months, sorry.
I mean, we worked out earlier actually in the car that I think we've done 270 odd Goldilocks visits in the last couple of years. And I can genuinely say that the results from those visits have not been the same in any two sites. There's probably the odd one here and there. But every single business we go to is different. So the premise of it is we will go out, we will look at all the things that affect a rota within the business. We'll then sit, write a base rota with the managers, establish what their flex is, how many more people they need to get up to their high sales level. But it really takes into account all the different elements for each individual business, even when you've got, brands. So Buckham, we've got Buckham Boutique Inns, which is their kind of really high premium end of the business. And every single one of them was different. They can have the same number of bedrooms, they can have the same restaurant layout, but ultimately, the results from all of them were completely different. So, applying a one-size-fits-all approach just doesn't really work.
And is that safe to say that's one of your favorite parts of the program, in terms of when you get to do the Goldilocks and you get to come to places like this?
Definitely. So yeah, that's the kind of pitfalls that we usually see. So, go on, try to fix.
And that's an interesting one. Just I was thinking about the thought process behind a business, thinking about their culture and their teams. It also goes sort of hand in glove with that, doesn't it? Because of the nature of the visits, the personalization of it, the buy-in from the general managers, the deputies, the chefs.
All ex-operators. So everyone in my team is, we've all been there, we've all run chunky pubs and hotels and stuff. So I think getting that buy-in for the managers and actually spending the time to sit down and go, right, this is your opportunity. You tell us what you need. It works. So, yeah.
Excellent. So we promised our audience and people joining us today some quick wins, that a little sort of S4 nuggets of wisdom, which is a terrible phrase, but that's the best I came up with. What if we gave some actual insight, something they can implement in their businesses tomorrow that they can see some differences? This is real simple, but what are they?
Not teaching anyone to suck eggs, all right? And it's a lot of the time that we end up working with people on projects is simply time. Having the time or taking the time to actually take a step back and just look at some of these things. But genuinely going away, you could go away today and look at a few things, and it would make a big difference straight away. So first one is considering your requirement for labor outside of taking cash. So we would all dearly love to be able to, or we would have done when we were back running pubs. We'd love to walk in the door, pour some pints, serve some great food, look after some guests, serve the last pint, walk out the door and go home. And that's all you ever did. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So we always do, as part of the project, we do a task management session where we get GMs and head chefs in a room and let them debate. But thinking about jobs that need to be done within the business outside of just taking money. How long are those jobs taking? Why are they taking that long? Where are they being done within the business? Is it something that can be done during trading time? When are they being done, and are they being properly planned? And actually really get into the detail of that. I mentioned GM admin days earlier, or manager admin days. Bit of a pet hate, to be honest. I get it. There's a load of stuff that comes with running a pub, running a business.
Yeah, and there's still a lot of empathy, isn't there? The old pun of 12 plates being spun at the same time. It is tough.
But if you don't get into the detail of what actually needs to be done and how long it's taking, then putting yourself on a 9 till 6 on a Monday to go in and do admin, you'll find yourself trying to fill time. The managers will try and fill their time with stuff to do. I'm not saying there isn't always something to do, but breaking down what actually has to happen and when it has to happen and how long it takes, and then planning that properly into a rota will stop you wasting money elsewhere.
And I think if you do that as a collective, the buy-in is the agreement, isn't it? It's not just one person telling you
It's quite funny.
what I need.
See, somebody said in the room, we go, I can write my rota in an hour, and someone else goes, well, it takes me 3. And then they have a good old debate about why and how long and why it takes them so long.
There's also that one story about close downs as well, in terms of when you genuinely ask someone how long it takes them to close a business down, and on their own versus.
I hadn't even thought about answering that. You're right. There was a situation that we were in once, and I was due to go and do a Goldilocks visit the day after, and I just so happened to be staying down in London at this point. I went into the business the night before and saw how many people were on till close. 6 at this point. Place was empty, and it was a mess. So lots of them beyond the bar, flocking, as we call it. Still beyond the bar, having a bit of a natter and taking their time closing down. And went in the next day and said to the manager, oh, I was actually in last night, and had a look of horror on her face because she realized she'd been sat at the bar having a drink when she was on the road. But anyway, that's not the point. I sat there and said to her, if you'd shut the doors at 11 o'clock last night, how long would it have taken you on your own to close this business down? Everything. And she went, oh, 4, 5 hours? And I went, okay, so you had 6 people working for 3 hours last night. So it took 18 hours for them to close the business, and you just told me you could have done it in 4. So anyway, sorry, random story. But that applying that mentality and getting people to actually think about how long stuff takes or how long it should take, and then writing the rotas appropriately is massive.
Massive
So,
impact. Yep, that's number one.
no,
Second one.
review your forecasting accuracy. So yeah, we've said it's difficult at the moment. Everything's changing. Hospitality has changed quite a lot. But look at the detail of forecasting for the managers and how close are they getting. If they are over forecasting, they will be overspending on that, one way or another.
Nothing quite as simple as over forecasting to mask a bit of overstaffing, is there?
So if they are over forecasting, if they are under forecasting, then they're potentially capping their sales.
Yeah.
If they're working to a good budget, if they're working to a good labor ratio that they could set or a labor target, then one way or another, over forecasting their labor spend, under forecasting, they're probably capping sales. We know how difficult it is to flex up and down. I think it's as difficult to do one as it is to do the other.
I was going
to
say, which you reckon is it easier?
Both.
It's tough, isn't it?
I think it's both as difficult. You know, we all know you can flex up at a much lower ratio than you can flex down. You should be flexing down to your budget. But ultimately, you could ask the whole team if someone wants to go home and someone could go no. And technically, and nobody could say yes. And technically, if there was a rotor, they've
got hours to work.
Flexing up is just as difficult. If you haven't planned properly in the first place, if you haven't forecast for the people that you probably will need, then ultimately, you're going to end up at a point where you can't just call somebody and get people in. So I think it's as difficult to do either. So, you know, we're really lucky with some of the tools that we've got, some of the coaching that we go out and do. You know, we saw, I think it was 7% forecast accuracy improvement in the last project that we did.
Really?
And it translates.
Yeah.
So you can see then that the planning is far more accurate. They're a lot closer to the numbers that they need to be at.
Fantastic. And one more?
One more.
Can we promise three?
Sales patterns. Look at your actual sales patterns. So I've said it a couple of times already. The last project that we did was genuine surprise at how much their trading pattern had shifted.
Right.
So we actually saw that, I mean, across the industry anyway, brunch and that middle of the day, so between lunch and dinner, are actually the two biggest growth areas.
Oh, we're talking about these consumer habits and how, things are changing.
Yeah, they're the two biggest growth sessions.
Yeah.
But the biggest decline across the board is post 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So it's not that everyone's still coming out to dine at 7, 8, 9 o'clock anymore. It's shifting earlier.
Shifting earlier.
So there was genuine surprise when we started to look into the detail of that. So actually looking at sales patterns and sales trends day by day, hour by hour, and understanding how many people you need to be able to deliver those sales is huge. So if you do the first one, you look at what you need outside of your trading pattern.
Yeah.
Then you look at your sales forecast to dictate how many people you need. Final one is just looking at your actual trading pattern for the days. It makes a huge amount of difference. You'll either be, you know, overspending in areas where you don't need to, or potentially capping sales at points when actually your sales dictate that you need more people. So really getting into the detail, but going away and one way or another, you know, there's loads of, even for those that don't use S4, there's till providers will have access to hourly sales data. So go and look at it.
Good.
Yeah. So three things.
No, they're really good. And just because I'm time checking us because we're having a whale of time, just because there was a lot of information there, just recap really brief and to the point, the three takeaways just for the audience.
Look at your requirement for staff outside of taking cash.
So non-sales driven areas. Yep.
Review your forecast and accuracy.
Yep.
And challenge it if it's not good enough. And the final one is look at your hour by hour sales requirement.
Perfect. Brilliant. Fantastic. Right. As we are looking at the clock, we have got, a bit of a Q&A session where we can answer questions that have been sent in. Before we get there, though, we were going to talk about a little bit of a sort of incentive. Is that what you want to call it? And you corrected me because I was sort of looking at, because today we've been amazing audience. We've got some customers who are part of the family already. We've got people who maybe just exploring S4 for the first time, and I was probably overthinking what we were going to do for each, and you just said no, let's just keep it simple, same thing, doesn't matter who you are, where you're from. Tom's got a little bit of a
so we've mentioned Goldilocks. We will go out and spend a full day on site with a load of our customers, so not quite that extreme, as much as I'd love to get around some of the parts of the country or restaurants or hotels. What we will do is go in and do a bit of a, what we're calling a Goldilocks deep dive into a site for people that have attended. So for those of you that are S4 customers, it's really, really simple for us. We can get into some, you know, we'll pick a site or you can pick a site. We'll get into the real detail of their rotors and present that kind of a 3-point plan of where we think there's a bit of opportunity. For non-customers, it's exactly the same thing. We'll just need a little bit of data. We'll need some rotors from you.
So I was going to say, what sort of data would that involve?
Data
Okay.
and rotor data, pretty
Okay.
much. Just so we can get into, we've seen enough rotors, we've written enough rotors. That's what we spend our lives doing. So I think there'll be some real clear opportunities. Same thing, we'll present back a 3-point plan for everybody for one of their sites, and we'll go from there. That's normally, say, normally quite a big part of our project. So we'll do
Fantastic.
that for everyone.
Sounds exciting. And I'll wrap that up at the end just to reaffirm how we go about doing that. But right, so what have we got some questions that I can see popping up on your screen? My
Yeah.
eyesight's not as good
Looks
as
good.
yours,
So
so.
Darren has asked a question. What would you class as accurate forecasting within 10%? Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
10% is I mean, 5% up or down is great. Like, that's really, really good forecasting. We'll always target 10%. So obviously when we go out and do these projects and we go out and train managers, we'll always say, this is where we'd like to see you. That improvement we saw in one of the projects we did a little while ago, they were kind of 15, 14, 15% out, usually over forecast, unfortunately, across the course of, we always take kind of a year's worth of data. And I think they were around the 15% mark, and by the time we finished the project, they were eight. So they were within 8% consistently.
I think that's the key word, isn't it? When forecasting accuracy is that measure of the difference between good performers and bad performers or poor performers, isn't it? And some can be not realizing that they are way out if they don't have the right tool.
And the other thing that under forecasting is as bad as over forecasting. They're both as bad as each other.
Yeah.
There's that old, under promise over deliver,
Yeah.
to me is actually not the best thing. Accuracy for me should be the key.
Yeah.
It's not the, oh look, we smashed budget last week, we beat our sales forecast by 20 grand. Well, great. How much did you leave on the table? Because you were probably understaffed the whole week. So I'm not the biggest fan of that phrase.
We
It's
hoped.
all about accuracy.
Yeah, exactly. Great.
Cool.
What next?
We will look. What's the most common mistake you see operators make? Planning their labor and their teams. I think the block rotoring is so shift briefings. Okay.
Oh, the good old shift briefing.
Contentious subject, but I was always absolutely adamant that I did a shift briefing at 11:45 and 11:45 every single day.
That's how we cut our teeth, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And 11:30 on a Sunday with a few croissants and stuff to encourage the
Bacon,
team.
bacon
But
sandwich.
ultimately, like I said earlier, labour was costing us £5, £6 an hour then for our 18-year-old food runners, whereas now it's 16. So staggering start times is really, really important. So I think the most common mistake is we have to have everyone in at 12 o'clock, and we have to have everybody working till close is the other end of the scale.
Yeah.
And they'll be out quicker if there's more than closing. They won't. They'll distract each other.
Yeah.
They'll lock and go to the coffee machine and go to the pass, and they'll take their time closing down. So I think definitely the most common mistake is just that, definitely having to have everyone in at 12 o'clock to brief people. If you've got a decent briefing sheet, they don't all need to be there.
Yeah.
And also coaching your managers to think about who they're staggering the start times on,
Yeah.
and who they're staggering on the finishes as well.
So big opportunities on the start of the day and the end of the day in terms of start and end times, right?
So yeah, block rotary is probably the most common mistake.
Yeah, it happens.
The NI change, do we see a possibility this will be adjusted in November? That is a fantastic question, and I don't know.
The crystal ball time, that is.
So not a clue on that one. Apologies. How long does it take to see results if I start thinking and focusing more on labor spend? Genuinely, I'm not exaggerating when I say it's absolutely immediate. You might have a week's worth of rotors or 2 weeks' worth of rotors that are already planned, but we all know you can change a shift for a team member with 48 hours' notice. We try not to say to people, don't have that conversation with your team at first, but There's no reason you can't start getting into the detail of your rotors in the next couple of weeks and going, well, why have I got this many people? Do I need them? Is it the right time to have them? I think the difficult bit, I guess, is not when you'll see the impact, it's how quickly you can get in to make the difference. So the question there says, I've got six pubs and they're all different.
Yeah.
Precisely what we said earlier, they are
Goldilocks.
all different.
Yeah.
And when we go and do a Goldilocks visit, we will spend all day there. It's not a quick exercise,
No.
but the results off the back of it, you will see immediately. So I think it's definitely something that people need to take a step back and take the time to do.
And that's what the word of the day is, simplicity, isn't it, all the way? This has got to be simple. It's got to be bought in by the team, and therefore the actionable insights are immediate, aren't they? Because they're real.
We did we had one of our guys in the office, Harry, is working on a bit of a project at the moment, and he went out and did a Goldilocks visit for Goldilocks visits for a small pubs. We did the data pre Goldilocks, we mapped the Goldilocks period, so it was three visits in a week, and then
Yeah.
we mapped post Goldilocks. And yes, there was sales increase, so we're looking at like for likes as well as looking at the 3 weeks prior. But the labor ratio dropped by 3% immediately. The margin was the ratio was 3% lower straight away after the Goldilocks visits because they went away, they started using the templates that we created when we were there, and they saw the impact immediately. So there's no reason it can't happen straight away. To be honest.
That's why I use the word turbocharge, because that's what you do. You turbocharge.
Absolutely. What is the percentage aim for front of house net labor to net sales? Massively dependent on service style, business type, layout. What we will see quite a lot is that a hugely complex business with multiple, example of a small business inside that's got a massive garden, we tend to see a lower base cost in the first place because actually you can run it with far fewer team, but the minute you start taking cash, you need more people.
Yeah.
Therefore, the flex percentage is a bit higher. It honestly, it varies massively. I don't want to sit here and go 32% labor spend for a whole site is a good result, but it's one of those that it really does depend. And I think it's base and flex is key with that. You will have sites that have a much higher base cost. Therefore, when they're off season, their spend is going to be higher, and you just need to plan for that.
Yeah.
Whereas hit the summer months, and they'll probably come way below. So massively changes.
And base and flex is obviously, as to your Goldilocks point, it's individualized by site, specific to that. Yep.
We answered that one. I'm sorry, I'm going to tick some of these while we're on. So, what are your top team retention tips? Top team retention
Top
tips.
team retention tips.
Four.
I.
Empowerment for managers,
Yeah.
we said it earlier. Bit of trust, training.
Well, I was going to say the one thing I always really enjoy is inductions, like making sure your induction is absolutely the best it can be. And I always, when we had team members starting, especially if they were living, the bed was made, fresh bedding, the uniform was on the bed, ready to go, all their check sheets, their manuals, it's a big deal. And I think that first impression sets the standard, and the passion starts from that point. I really strongly believe that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if we hark back to S4, we said earlier that day part, being a day part, looking when you genuinely need people. There is nothing that will upset the team more than having to code on a shift or getting absolutely battered on a shift or being bored on a shift. It's
Yeah,
just as bad.
just bad.
If
Yeah.
they're stood around bored, they're not going to be happy. They're not going to want to stay in the job. So, unless they're really lazy, in which case they're probably not the right people you're doing there anyway. So, I think that yes, hopping back to S4, deploying your team properly will keep them happy. Management retention, I think, is down to empowerment and training and coaching and making sure they've got
And we saw some great examples. Some of our customers are nailing it at the moment, aren't they? And yeah, you see their summer parties and they shut their businesses for a day, and it's a big, that's a big thing. Well, you do, yeah, absolutely. Well deserved invite, well deserved. Right, we are 1 minute away from quarter two, so we've got a quick one more, and then we'll, if there is such a thing.
It's a good retention strategy for one shifters and your regular teams. Can't say about the NI and budget plans, but what's a good retention strategy for the one shifters and regular teams? Retention strategy in terms of keeping them in the business. I think the single shifters, and I said it earlier, I always built my team on full timers. It was always regular team. It's really easy to train them. You know, they're there all the time, working full time. It's really easy to get them in and train them. But I think the one shifters, you just need to be, first off, really honest and realistic with them about what the job's going to entail. They're never going to be that absolute superstar section waiter necessarily, unless they've come with loads of experience, they've been coached and trained, and you've got a bit of an opportunity. But if you've got someone in for 8 hours a week, their induction's really important. They can't just be a get them in. They start on Saturday night. Let's get them in. They're only doing one shift a week. It doesn't matter. Induction is massively important. Training them to do the job role they're going to be expected to do really well. So yeah, they're a food runner. Okay, well, coach them and train them properly how to run food.
How many do you still see carrying two plates?
So yeah, training them, and those single shifters will still get, as long as they get the welcome, they get the induction, they get the training, they're still going to want to work there, and they're not going to go anywhere. So that's probably what I would say.
Good. If there's any more questions that we haven't got to, we will respond to them. Don't worry. But we are up against it. Time has flown by. So just to sort of wrap up the session, thank you very much for joining us. If you joined today, you clearly care about performance, and we hope, Tom and I hope we've rewarded your time this afternoon, and you've had some insight in terms of what we do. We'll reach out to everyone later this week and maybe next week, but soon, just to sort of follow up. We'd love to have a chat, get some feedback about the webinar, and more importantly, just see if there's an opportunity to explore operational excellence with you all. But from Tom and I, really massive thanks for joining us. Have a great day, and we'll see you again soon. Thanks.
We are going to have a beer in the pub.
No. Oh, God. Okay.
Thanks very
much. See you later. Bye.
If you found this episode helpful, make sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your colleagues. You can also follow S4 Labour on LinkedIn for updates and additional content. If you have any questions or like to get in touch, you can reach us at hello@s4labour.co.uk or visit www.s4labour.co.uk. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode.